everyone, and welcome to our September collision course between 7 Investing and Crypto EQ. A reminder, if you're new to the program, the collision is between equities and cryptocurrencies, which are finding more and more similarities and more developments that we want to talk about as investors. I'm 7 Investing founder and CEO Simon Erickson. I'm joined by Crypto EQ partner Raven Moore. As always, Raven, really nice to have you on the show here today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We also have another special guest. One of our 7 Investing Lead Advisors, Christoph Piekarski, is also going to be joining us for this and several future shows as well. Christoph, welcome to the program. Nice to have you here. We're going to jump right in. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about the Biden administration's crypto executive order, some updates on that. We're going to be talking about a development with BlackRock and Coinbase. We're going to be talking about some fun developments in NFTs. But Raven, the first story I think we should jump into is Ethereum, because there's a big development right now with Ethereum switching from a proof of work to a proof of stake mechanism. Tell us all, first of all, what that means and how this is going to be so impactful.
Okay, yeah. So the merge is probably one of the biggest events in cryptocurrency since the Bitcoin was invented. So the Ethereum merge is scheduled for September 15th, which is within this week. Ethereum is going to be switching from the proof of work consensus mechanism to proof of stake consensus mechanism. And what that looks like is the new Ethereum that are minted is going to, currently it's being, you know, created through energy output of the miners. Once the merge happens, Ethereum will switch to proof of stake and the new coins will go to whoever has a stake in the network. So the proof of stake will go to, the more Ethereum you have, you will earn the new Ethereum that's being issued in a proof of stake model. And so that's a fundamental difference, and it'll have different trade-offs about the security and the governance of that network going forward.
Is this a controversial change, Raven? You said it's the biggest deal since the formation of, you know, Bitcoin and crypto. I mean, like you said, I can see that a lot of people have voiced frustrations, if we can call it that, about proof of work and all the energy that it's requiring over the time. But it's not like proof of stake is a perfect mechanism either, right?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of ESG narrative going on in the news these days. And moving from proof of work to proof of stake will lower the energy output of Ethereum by over 99%. And it'll be much more green, much more cleaner, much more energy friendly. And so that is one of the best, you know, good things that are going, that's going for the proof of stake model. But on that, there's always a trade-off. So the trade-off is the control of the network will kind of be in the hands of the people who have the most Ethereum. And so it'll kind of be up for more capture, or it'll be less secure. But those are trade-offs that I think the team at Ethereum has considered rightfully, and they've made the decision to go forward with this. Other things to consider with the Ethereum merge are the miners. So the people who have currently spent a lot of their money to buy these computers to mine Ethereum, once the merge goes through, their computers are going to be worthless effectively for that use. So the question is, what are those guys going to do? Are they going to mine some other cryptocurrency? Are they going to sell those machines to video people who want to do games, or are they going to use those chips for something else, for some other purpose? So I think that'll be interesting. And that might also have some effects on the graphics card market, secondary graphics card market, which could also affect NVIDIA and also other, you know, companies in that sector.
I think that's our takeaway for the equity side of this, right? And NVIDIA sells the graphics processing units, the GPUs. A lot of miners have been using those for mining Ethereum, Bitcoin, and other things. If they don't need to do that anymore, as you mentioned, because it's now proof of stake, is that demand for NVIDIA's processors absent in the market? You know, Christoph, it's certainly something we need to be thinking about, because that's been perhaps a driver of demand in a couple of years past. Raven, one more question I had for you on this one was, how does the cryptocurrency investing community think about this change? Has it been generally accepted and positive and optimistic about it? Or is there a lot of concern and hesitation and frustration, or somewhere in the middle of those?
I think the vast majority of people are positive about this change. A lot of people are very excited. that Ethereum is moving to proof of stake. The only people who seem to, you know, be pointing out that this might not be the best thing to do are like the Bitcoin community, who will, after this change, be the only proof of work cryptocurrency available. So, and then there's also the opportunity in this upgrade for people have been discussing, what if the miners decide to fork Ethereum and say, we want to keep proof of work intact, and let, then there will be two, Ethereum could then split into two, which is a, hopefully it's a far off, and that outcome does not happen, because that would be very confusing and a lot of uncertainty there with that outcome.
Well, speaking of uncertainty, there is some more uncertainty that's been introduced by the Biden administration here. We did see that they had an executive order earlier this year, I believe it was March or April, that they were kind of trying to firm up some of the regulations, you know, how they were going to regulate spot prices, how the Commodities Future Trading Commission, the CFTC, was going to, who was going to kind of have jurisdiction over crypto, you know, if this was tied to or tokenized to other regulated products like stocks or things like that, who was going to actually make the decision out of this, a lot of this. A lot of this is kind of still up in the air, Raven, but as you pointed out, there was actually an announcement yesterday that caught a lot of people off guard, that the White House might have some controls people didn't realize that they might enforce. What's going on here with this development?
Okay, so yesterday, the Biden administration put out a paper that said they would be willing to limit or eliminate Bitcoin mining for reasons of, you know, pollution, energy consumption, and other things like that. So this caught a lot of people off guard. This is a huge, important thing for cryptocurrency and for Bitcoin specifically. So it's very interesting to see them put out this kind of warning shot, you know, if you want to call it that. But we do know that the current administration in the White House is very focused on ESG and being green and moving towards that goal. So I think that this fits the narrative of ESG, is that proof of work uses energy, therefore energy consumption is bad. But that's not the take that I have on it. I actually believe that Bitcoin mining is good for the electrical grid. And we can see that happening here in the state of Texas, where Bitcoin mining increases the demand load for our energy grid, such that it basically funds the improvements to the grid so that we don't have, you know, issues like the Texas winter storm in the future, because we're able to raise our supply and our infrastructure based on the demand from Bitcoin miners. So it's just interesting to see the politics at play here.
Interesting is the right word. You know, we have to always be mindful of, you know, anything political in any way, but we are seeing it impact lots of industries at the higher level, right? We just saw California is trying to phase out internal combustion engines for electric vehicles, you know, within the next decade. But of course, then at the same time, they're having power brownouts and other issues that might be further complicated. This seems like another hot topic. You know, when you're talking about power, you're talking about ESG, we talked about all the things that are involved with that, a proof of work, but just to even have that on the table, that's a big statement to even, you know, have the hammer that could come down on this. We saw China do this a year ago, right? And there were certainly repercussions in China from basically banning Bitcoin mining. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the U.S. would actually do something like this, Raven? Or is this just something that's a note that people are catching the attention of, knowing that they have the ability if they want it?
Well, here's the thing about the United States government, is that there are multiple checks and balances, and the government is run by the people. So if there are people, and there will be people that disagree with this, then there will be challenges immediately to any kind of law. I think Congress would need to write it. I don't think it would go through. But if the president tries to do an executive order, then I definitely know that there will be lawsuits left and right from Bitcoin miners to fight for their right to use energy and for a productive use. So I think that this was kind of published in order to kind of read the room and check the temperature on what would the, how would the press take it? How, what would the backlash be? So this is one of, this is an election year. So we'll see how people are feeling, you know, people will, you know, vote, and that's their say in the government. And I think we just have to participate in the progress, and that's in the process. That's something that, you know, crypto people haven't been doing as much over the last few years, but I think that it's going to become more and more important to, you know, protect the industry that's being created here. Is crypto individuals, crypto people, people who care, are going to have to start participating in the process and letting their needs be known.
I think that's a great way to put it, because almost when you say the word regulations, there's this negative connotation with it, right? Regulations is going to stifle innovation. It's going to slow down innovation in the industry, but maybe that's not the case. Maybe regulations, at least if the government is supportive of listening to what the people want, is just setting the bar that everyone's going to abide by. And you know now what's out of bounds, and you know what is acceptable. And maybe that is also in a positive light going to support innovators to say, okay, regulations are in place. I can know how I'm supposed to proceed in this new industry that's going on out there.
And definitely. And I think regulations can be very good. They can be very helpful, and they can help to separate the people who are trying to take advantage of others and the people who are actually trying to build and innovate. And so when there are no regulations, there's this gray area where the people who are trying to do the right thing are also lumped in with the people who are, you know, trying to scam and defraud others. But when we have clear definitions and we have the rules of the road, then the people who are doing the right thing can then point out the people who are not doing the right thing. And then we can have growth. We can have certainty so that we can operate in a way that is clear and like every other industry.
Christoph, do you want to chime in before we move to the next topic? Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think you guys already summarized it pretty well. But when I was there at Consensus and I saw the two senators and congressperson talking about regulation, and to me, it felt like it was a move in the supportive direction that, yes, people do want something. It can't be the Wild West forever with people losing their fortunes. And so this executive order seems like it's just starting to create a knot between the multiple factions of government, and I have no idea how it gets untangled.
Speaking of Austin-based conferences on cryptocurrencies, you just mentioned Consensus, Christoph. Raven, I think you were just recently at the BitBlock Boom conference up in Austin. Any fun takeaways or any read on, you know, what's being talked about right now? Can you tell us kind of about what the conversations steered? Yeah, which way the conversation is steering out there right now?
Definitely. So BitBlock Boom was an amazing conference. It was a smaller conference than like the Bitcoin Miami conference and others like that. But this was a Bitcoin maximalist focused conference. And kind of the key talking points there were Bitcoin mining. A lot of people were Bitcoin miners were there. So there were miners. There were the newest industry, I think, coming around Bitcoin mining is now insurance products catered to those miners. So that looks like property insurance, casualty insurance, and even things like business interruption insurance based on the hash rate are now being developed as well. So that entire insurance market could then make Bitcoin mining more investable, you know, less risky. It'll de-risk the space. So Bitcoin mining was a key, Lightning was a key. So that's a scalability, a speed, and a privacy layer that's on Bitcoin. So Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin Lightning. And then there were some other softwares that I thought were very, very interesting. One of them was a bookkeeping software that connects to QuickBooks. So if you're a merchant and you're selling things for Bitcoin, then you can integrate this software and then it'll bring all the data over to your QuickBooks for your business. Another thing I saw was some mining software to regulate the equipment just so that the output is maximized to the T. So these miners are trying to get peak performance from their machines and get the peak useful life of these very expensive machines. So I think mining and lightning were kind of the key things there at the Bitblockchain conference.
Yeah, perfect. Christoph, would you like to chime in too? I know Consensus was a couple months ago, but you do live in Austin, got to attend that conference. Any kind of key takeaways that you had from that one?
Key takeaways. I'm not sure I had much to contribute, because so much of the breakout stuff is technical and way beyond my pay grade. But one thing I try to pay attention to is always that the very high level of stuff. And a question, going to a conference, there's so much energy and there's so much optimism and there's so many shops set up. And sometimes I can't tell the authentic from the gimmicky and whatnot. And so what I'm always left with is this question about the seasonality of the industries. In other words, I know in the AI world, there's the AI winter and then the AI spring, where in the AI winter, you have the scientists saying this can't be done. It's just impossible task. And then spring comes along and you see the new upgrades and the new updates and the new progress, and people begin being optimistic, saying, no, AI is coming. And I think I don't know to what extent it's a useful analogy for the crypto world. We're in a crypto winter, I guess, price-wise, but I always wonder, especially as someone like Raven, even in the pessimistic time, is the overall feeling like, no, crypto's going to make it, or was it just a really exuberant fad? And of course, in a conference like that, everyone's like, rah, 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 but I'm not good enough to tell. So Raven, how do you feel? I guess it's like that. I'm going to punt this to you. In the depths of winter, how do you feel right now?
Well, I feel like I'm in a perpetual spring, but it's also very good to read the room and see how everybody else is feeling. So right now there's a lot less people in the room. Everybody's left the room. But the people who are still here are the people that are building and innovating and are building the products that will bring the next wave of, the guys who are only here when the weather's nice. I don't know what you would call those people, the fair weather fans or what have you. The people building things now are going to build the stuff that are going to bring in the next cohort. And as you were saying, you don't know who's real and who is more marketing and more gimmicky. I think that is the big challenge in crypto, because it's so new, it's so nascent, that you have to be skeptical of most everything. You have to be skeptical of all of the projects, and you also have to, don't trust, but verify. If somebody is, telling you that this thing can make large amounts of APY, then you have to consider, okay, so how are they making this money? Where is this money coming from? And I think that is the big question that you always have to keep asking yourself, is where is this coming from? How does this have value? And if you can think through that from first principles, I think that is kind of the best way to approach this market. And the people building right now and that are still enthusiastic, I think these are the people that will, in the long run, be very happy that they stuck around and continue to participate and learn and network and grow, because it's a very tight-knit community. I think crypto is very small, and so the people that are working are all getting to know each other because they're all helping each other build this market.
And I think I'd say from an investing standpoint, when you can't tell the difference between one or the other, immediately run to the credentials of the leaders making the stuff. Mm-hmm. Like really learn about the people, because character can't be deceived for too long. Mm-hmm. And so when you have really intelligent, lifelong scholars and engineers and developers working on a project, you could probably intuit they're not in it for the cheap gimmick. And likewise, when that's absent, be careful.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. And then another thing I would argue is that even if that person has an immaculate record, if they have more control than, if they're able to exert control over the protocol itself, that is another red flag. Like if a change needs to be made and they can just push it through willy-nilly, like it was very easy to make that change, then that's another red flag. For example, this Ethereum merge has been, they've been working towards this for multiple years, you know? So it's not a very simple change, very complex change. And this, the group of people needed to do this have been working on it for months and months and months, over 2 years now. That being said, how large and distributed and diverse is that group, right? So you always have to, the trade-offs, how competent is the group? How much control do they exert? Can they put over the thing itself?
Now, Raven, I want to spite you with one of each here. I've got one long-term, sustainable, awesome story. That'll be our final story here. But before we get to that, I've got one that maybe falls on the line of the markety, skeptical. I don't know if this is real or if this is to stay, like Christoph just mentioned. But I did want to at least talk about it, that Reddit is now allowing collectible avatars to be purchased on its platform. They are created and sold over the OpenSea platform. Again, these are non-fungible tokens, NFTs. But you can buy them on the Reddit Avatar store page for between $5 and $50. A lot of them are being sold for a lot more than that. Is there anything to this? I mean, Reddit gets a lot of traffic as a website, Raven. Is there anything to this story, or is this just more marketing?
I think this is just a really fun, way to participate in Reddit. You know, a lot of people love Reddit. I use Reddit a lot. And I think this is just a cool way to kind of show that you're like a super cool Reddit user by buying a limited edition or one of one avatar. It's like swag, you know? You have a piece of swag. Like, I have this, no one else can have it. So that's how I look at it. It is marketing. It's for fun. So I wouldn't look at this as an investment. I wouldn't go try to buy a bunch of them to get the rare one to resell it and make a bunch of money. I'm sure someone will be able to, but to me, that's not as much investing. This is more collecting and like trading cards, video games type.
Christoph, I have a trivia question for you. Most of the NFTs sold for these avatars, like we said, are purchased sold for between $5 and $50. The most expensive NFT sold on the Reddit platform so far is the Mouse number 12 avatar. It was sold in a Polygon bridged Ethereum on September 3rd. What was the value dollar of that avatar, Christoph, to the nearest US dollar?
This is the top value.
Most expensive so far of the avatars that are sold on Reddit's NFTs. Just launched within this last month.
What was the average range?
$5 to $50 is the average for most of them, yeah.
I'm going to say 14,000.
A good guess, Ray. Would you like to guess on this too? Knowing that there is no way to tell what the number is here.
I'm going to guess 250K.
Yeah, it's actually $333 so far.
Okay. It's
cheap. You know, you might as well be $300, guys. I mean, no need for $150,000 for a custom avatar. Reddit NFT is a fun story, like we said, just to follow along. But Raven, let's talk about the more serious one here, the one that's actually, I think, really is building something cool, is the integration of BlackRock with Coinbase, right? So BlackRock has got $10 trillion of assets under management right now. A lot of it is ETFs, a lot of it is retirement funds, things like this. Coinbase is quickly becoming one of the most popular cryptocurrency exchanges right now. And the integration is that BlackRock's Aladdin clients, which is the platform for their institutional investors or portfolio managers, will now get access to buying or selling cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, through their Coinbase Prime platform. Coinbase Prime has 13,000 clients. And again, this is mostly institutional clients who have access for more than 300 different cryptocurrency assets. The way that I think of this, Raven, I would love to hear your opinion on this, but just to have the first opinion on it, is these are two very, very large platforms, right? Financial services platforms that are now figuring this out together. And you and I have chatted on several of these collision course calls in the past about how are institutions going to embrace crypto. You know, we know that if you've got a retirement account, you've got to deal with risk management. You don't want to have everything to go up and down in cycles because people are counting on retirement income or whatnot. Now we've got a potentially new asset class with Bitcoin or the larger buckets of cryptocurrencies that can minimize some of that volatility, hedge some of the volatility of some of the other asset classes we always talk about, whether that's stocks or bonds or other or real estate or anything else like that. And so I think that this is a portfolio management tool. It's a risk management tool that seems like it's been embraced, or at least of interest for institutional clients. And now there's a way to actually make trades and actually do the analysis between this partnership with BlackRock and with Coinbase that we've seen.
Yeah, I think this is huge. We've been saying for many, many years, the institutions are coming and now they're kind of here. And so now we can see it's not as rah-rah as we would have expected it to be. But what we talked about just the conversation prior, the people building during the bear market are the people that are going to enjoy the fruit when it is the springtime. So during the bear market, we can see big boys like BlackRock coming in, setting up their exchange and getting their institutional clients ready to go. So, I mean, this is the signal. Like, watch what they're doing, not what they're saying. While they have the U.S. government, the White House saying, oh, we might ban it. Look at what the people with the money are doing, right? So they're setting up the accounts for their institutional clients, for the people that they care about the most, the clients with a lot of money. They're helping them set up exposure to Bitcoin. And I believe that Bitcoin belongs in your portfolio. I believe it has a spot in everyone's portfolio, and how much Bitcoin as a percentage is up to the individual. But I do think that there's an argument to have some exposure to Bitcoin in everyone's portfolio.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's spot on, Raven. Christoph, to bring this over to the equities side of it, we like winner take most markets. We like where if you are the big dog in the industry, you capture the lion's share of the profits. And it seems like from an equities perspective, Coinbase, which is a publicly traded company, has certainly become one of the more popular platforms right now. They've established trust, and you know they've got a lot of people believing that they are one of the most secure platforms for buying or selling. That is, of course, important when you're charging fees directly tied to trading, which has been Coinbase's kind of MO and the business model for the past several years. But now you start seeing them unlocking optionality of new things like staking or subscriptions, you know, that could be tied to things in the future. Now they've got an enterprise presence, and now they've got an institutional presence. It's like there's advantages beyond just the trading volumes themselves and the dollars and cents that they derive from those of being one of the larger and more integrated platforms. And to me, this partnership with BlackRock is a perfect example of that. Raven or Christoph, any other thoughts on this story? You know, we could tie it all together unless you guys have any other final thoughts on this one.
Well, I guess I have a question for Raven, and that's based on what you just spoke about, Simon. Maybe the skeptical part of me wants to ask about not your wallet, not your crypto piece of this, because the way you were describing Coinbase, yes, there is a lot of trust being built up in all these ways, and not your wallet, not your crypto. So how do we negotiate that tight pass?
No, you let other people do with their money what they will. They can trust Coinbase with their funds. But personally, I would encourage every holder, every owner of a cryptocurrency to hold their own private keys. So, you know, that's completely self-sovereign, that you know, you are the only person that has access to your funds. We've seen an entire slew of companies over the last few months. What do? They stop withdrawals so that you have what it feels like it's your money. They tell you, oh yeah, you have your Bitcoin here. But then when they get into financial problems, then it's their Bitcoin. So to avoid any issues whatsoever, do not keep your crypto digital assets on an exchange. You want to definitely have your own private wallet. You want your own hardware wallet, something that is safe and secure, and you don't have to worry about a Celsius stopping withdrawals or a Voyager stopping withdrawals and keeping funds. I'm helping a friend of mine with her taxes, and she had some money on some exchange where she shouldn't, and that money is no longer accessible. So you want to hold your own keys, you know, self-custody. Self-custody is the most important part of investing in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency.
And now, Raven, I want to take the complete opposite approach from what I just said, which is that we've seen large companies that have been the trailblazers, got the users, became the most trusted or familiar name in their industry, then come back and be kind of like the pheromone emitting, you know, attractor of regulators in the future, right? Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, perfect example of, you know, the company that was a trailblazer and then kind of came back and now is getting a lot of scrutiny from the regulators. Do you think that Coinbase being the early trailblazer in crypto, at least for as a crypto exchange, is it benefiting from being first and having a large user base, or is it really going to be at the crosshairs of a lot of pain that others are going to learn from here?
I think you get both. So it's a double-edged sword. So yeah, you get the biggest target on your back, but you do have a large amount of the market share. So there's a risk associated with that. And I think that the thing about regulators is there's two sides to them. So even if one side likes you, you could then be targeted by the other side because of that fact. So in this new and emerging industry, I think everybody just has to look out for their own self-interest first and foremost. So as the user and as the individual, you got to watch out for your own self-interest, which means securing your private keys and making sure your investment will be there, whether or not Coinbase is shut down, you know, next to tomorrow. You know, that should not be a catastrophic loss event for a cryptocurrency investor or a Bitcoin holder or anyone like that. You have to assume worst case scenario and always be prepared for that. As if it happened tomorrow, would that ruin me? And if that's the case, then you need to do something different with your self-custody or with your assets.
Great point. Thanks very much, Raven. You know, for everyone who's listening, and all of this show is new, this has been our collision course with Crypto EQ. You know, 7 Investing, we always wanted to go out and search for a partner that really knew what they were talking about with cryptocurrencies. We talked a lot about Bitcoin and Ethereum, but Crypto EQ is actually looking at a whole bunch of different crypto assets. I know that you guys are publishing core reports for your paying subscribers. Anyone who wants to follow along with them, it's cryptoeq.io is their website. And if you want to follow along with our stock market recommendations, 7investing.com. Raven and Christoph, this one was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you being part of the show this month.
Thank you, Simon. It's great to be here.
And we'll thanks, special guest Christoph. You know, I hope to have you back for a couple more shows in the future. We certainly have a lot of fun with these collision courses. We'll be back at you again next month in October with more to talk about the collision between equities and cryptocurrencies. Until that time, my name is Simon Erickson. We are here to empower you to invest in your future. We are 7 Investing. Have a great week.
A reminder that people on this program may hold positions in the companies that are mentioned. Buying and selling stock carries financial risk, which could include the loss of capital. The views in this program should not be taken as personalized advice. Before acting on any of the information provided, listeners are encouraged to consult a financial or tax professional.